We're glad that you're here and sharing this Sunday with us. Warm weather out there, but it seems pretty comfortable in here. The question that I put before on the screen that you see right now is simply this: what is your vision for the future? And every one of us need to have something that we want to see happen, we want to project, we want to have for the future. And no matter how old you are, you still need to be a vision-casting person. Need to be thinking about what's next, what can be accomplished, where am I going to be? We usually think sometimes, this is for kids, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? And then once you get to a certain age, what do you want to do after college? And then when you get to a certain age, what do you want to do when you turn 40? And then what do you want to do when you turn 50? And what do you want to do when you turn 60? And then you say, what are you going to do when you retire? And I'll be honest with you, I'm in that category. I'm not planning to retire too soon, but I'm in that category to where I keep thinking about what I want to do. Now that I've taken up the guitar, I want to join a band and go on the road, you know, and do that. But in all reality, we should always be thinking about the dreams and what's next. Because if we don't do that, then we fall into the rut of life and we become discouraged. In fact, it is commonly known that when people, men and women, get to a point of retirement, and if they have no goals, if they have no interests, if they have no hobbies, if they have no plans, many times it affects their health, their emotions, they fall into depression. And I think we've all heard about those folks that retire, and within a year they pass on. And then you see those folks that they retire and they're traveling, or they have a new job they're doing, they're taking on something part-time, they're doing a wood shop in their garage or whatever, but they have a goal of what they want to do. They seem to extend their life because they have something to look forward to. And we all have said that before. I want something to look forward to. And so that all comes down to vision. And so what is your vision for the future? The scripture says this. We're going to talk about the idea how God works in a vision. And the verse I'm going to read in other translations says, where there is no vision, people perish. But I like how it reads in the message, a transliteration, not really a translation. It says this: if people can't see what God is doing, they will stumble all over themselves. But when they attend to what he reveals, they are most blessed. And I like the way that reads there, because in all reality, if we can see what's happening, if we can get a glimpse of the vision that God has for us, we become more fulfilled, we become satisfied, we become understanding. But we can't get the vision, we can't feel where things are happening, we will stumble all over the place, and that's where I want to start this off. In the Bible, there are many great characters that had vision. And there's some interesting things I'm going to share about one in a second here. When I first started preparing this week, I thought about Joseph. You might have seen the play, the movie or whatever, The Coat of Many Colors. Joseph is the one that had that dream or that vision from God that he would one day rule over his brothers. And of course, we know that ended fairly well, although there was some turmoil between. Throughout the scriptures, there have been cases where people have gotten vision, have gotten directions from God, have gotten things they were told to do. When Jesus was conceived in Mary, and the vision came to Joseph that not to put her away because she had not done anything wrong, then that vision came, you need to escape into Egypt because the king at that time was seeking to kill babies up to 2 years old so they could eradicate the Messiah, so the king had heard. So those are all done through visions. And of course, you know, we sometimes don't believe in the idea of visions today of that sort, although I don't think God has changed his methods. I think sometimes we have changed our perceptions and our acceptance of certain things. But all through the scriptures is about visions. Well, one character in the New Testament we're going to read a scripture about, I'm going to set it up for you, is about the Apostle Paul. He started out with his name Saul. He was changed over. He actually had both names, but he called him Paul after his conversion. Paul, he was an interesting individual because he was the last likely to be chosen to do the job he was doing. One thing I like about Paul and vision is this: sometimes God does not pick out the most well-prepared person to do something. God sometimes picks out the person who seems to be the most unusual character to do something. Sometimes we think that preparation and growing up in church or whatever gives you the catalyst to be able to be something or do something, but many times God confounds us a little bit by choosing those people we didn't think would fit. Maybe the ones that growing up were the rough teenagers. Maybe the ones that were the rough child. Maybe the ones that as a young adult took their path a different way and now they're searching to come back. And what they're doing, they're transforming Christianity and faith and stuff for the younger people because they're trying to make it relevant to them. And sometimes we think, you know, there's a certain pathway to God using somebody. Well, Paul was an individual that really was the opposite of what we call a good Christian boy. He was raised in Judaism, the faith and the belief system of the Jews. He was a strict follower of the rules and regulations of the law. He was given certain authorities to do certain things. And when it came time, after Jesus had ascended to heaven, to be able to try to counteract and try to diminish and squash this movement called the Way, Jesus' Way, he was given the authority to be the key person that would go out and try to stop Christianity. And he took this mandate very, very seriously. He was given orders from the high priest. He was given the authority from Rome. He had everything. He was a Roman citizen. He also was in Judaism. So both gave him empowered. He was one of the most powerful people at that time to stop the movement of Christianity. And he went about from city to cities, and when he found people of the way, as they called it in the Bible, he would arrest them, and he would get them to either deny their faith in Jesus or they would be put in prison and sometimes even put to death, as we know what happened to Stephen in Acts chapter number 8 and 9. We know that he was stoned to death. And that was his job. His job was to eradicate Christianity. And he took it very, very seriously. And he had his mandate. He had his idea of what he wanted to do. He wanted to please the church. He wanted to be that person that basically did this job well and maybe someday future would even get a higher position. Well, as he is traveling around with his merry men, he got done doing work that was in Jerusalem and throughout the region there. And so he began to get direction to go to Damascus in Syria. And you got to remember, Roman government ruled the entire world, including Damascus and Syria. And so he started on the road to Damascus. And on this road, he got a vision. And it's an interesting thing I'm going to share about this vision, but he got this vision. And it was an encounter with God that gave him a unique understanding of what his life from that point in time would be. And what I want you to get from this, first of all, is that many times a vision comes to us when through an event, through a very firm event. Sometimes it's a process, but many times when we know what we want to do, it comes through the fact of an event. In fact, it's interesting. Did you know that most people that go to college graduate from college and don't work in the field they were trained for? The three kids are the exact same. I'm the only one that in my family that did, but my three kids train for one thing and do the total opposite or something different. And the reason why is because sometimes we think the process of going through education is going to give us our vision and all that. But many times during the time in college and right afterwards, we begin to see what we really want to do. And that vision comes to us. And it's okay to change. So what if you spent $100,000 of your parents' money? No one cares. We put three kids through college, and we think about the money we spent. And I'm they're all successful, doing just fine. But I'm thinking to myself, okay, we could have saved a lot of money, you know, if you just would have figured this out when you were 17 and 18 instead of 40. Anyways, but I say that because this is that sometimes a vision is an event. For me, it was. When I was in the military, right from Vietnam, I remember getting out, not sure what I wanted to do. I had skills as a boiler operator from a ship I was on, but it was a calling, it was a vision, it was clear, and I hit that path, and for almost 38 years, continued that path. It's an event many times, and that's what happened to Paul. And Paul was on the road to Damascus, and that's what happened. Now, he spent his life from about Acts chapter 9 to the end of the book of Acts. It's all about the workings of Paul. Paul and Silas, Paul and Barnabas, his partners, Paul and John Mark, going from city and city, and they were establishing churches. He was carrying out the vision, but he eventually got in trouble to where he was called in before King Agrippa, and eventually he was sent to Rome and to face trial there, and he has this encounter with King Agrippa. King Agrippa is questioning him. He's asking him, why are you doing what you're doing? And Paul is basically saying, I can't help because it is a clear mandate. This is my path for life. I have vision. And look what he says here. We're going to read in Acts chapter number 26, and we're going to read verses 12 through 19. This is his dialogue with King Agrippa. On one of these journeys, I was going to Damascus with the authority and commission of the chief priests. About noon, King Agrippa, as I was on the road, I saw a light from heaven, brighter than the sun, blazing around me and my companions. We all fell to the ground, and I heard a voice saying to me in Aramaic, "Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me? It is hard for you to kick against the goads." Then I asked, "Who are you, Lord?" "I am Jesus, for whom you are persecuting," the Lord replied. "Now get up and stand on your feet. I have appeared to you to appoint you as a servant," listen to this, "and a witness." And that word witness in the Greek language is the word martyr. "As a witness, as a servant, as a martyr for what you have seen and will see of me. I will rescue you from your own people and from the Gentiles. I am sending you to them to open their eyes and turn them from darkness to light and from the power of Satan to God, so that they may receive forgiveness of sins and the place among those who have been sanctified by faith in me." Here's his last thing he says to King Agrippa. "So then, King Agrippa, I was not disobedient to the vision from heaven." All his life, from that point in time, he went forward and accomplished that. Everything he learned in that dialogue with Jesus at that time, he took with him, and everything that was revealed after that. And the reason why, through the book of Acts, from chapter 9 until the end of the book of Acts, when he's in front of King Agrippa, he can say, "I have stayed the course." He says this in other books he wrote in Philippians, "I have stayed the course, I have kept the faith, I have finished my job." It's because, not because it was easy, not because everything fell into his laps, not because everybody was excited for him, not because when he got into the ministry, everybody said, "That's a good calling." He kept going because he will not be disappointed to the vision. And I believe that God gives every one of us a vision here. And we have to choose when we get that vision. In ministry, there's a place for service and ministry for every individual that is a child of God. God did not call us to be spectators, but to be participants. And it's not my job to tell you what I think you're qualified or whatever to do. In fact, if God instructs you and God empowers you, it is for you to let us know what God is leading you to do. And if it works into the framework of what we're doing, we need to help and support and see that go further. Because if you got a vision from God, we need to understand it's not for us to dictate. Now, in this story, it's quite interesting here. Because something I noticed. I read this a number of times. I reread it here. I added some things here. So guys in the PowerPoint are going to go nuts in a few minutes when I start sharing some things that are not in the PowerPoint, but I'll tell you. Is one thing that I notice here is that in this verse I just read, what is it, 9 verses I just read, something like that, it's interesting that every time that Paul referenced the vision, he says "I." The only time he uses the word "we" is when they all fell on their faces. If you look at that closely, he says, "I was on the road, I saw a light brighter than that." He says, "We all fell to the ground. I heard a voice saying," and then he says, "Then I asked." He says, "I am Jesus." He goes on here, "I will rescue you." He goes there, "I was not disobedient to the vision from heaven." So here's the thing that's happening. They're on this road. He's got his companions. He's got a security people that are with him. He's getting ready to go and send them out to find these Christian peoples and stop them. And this thing happens on the road to Damascus. And all of a sudden, Paul is having this conversation with Jesus Christ. And Jesus is telling him, "You need to stop what you're doing. It's hard for you to kick against the goad." And what he was saying there, it's hard for you to stop a movement like this. It's kind of like, it's hard for you to stop, you know, if you've ever seen in the Old West when they had the horses and cattle come running through a town or whatever, and they were just running through there. It's hard for you to go against the grain, is what he's saying, because this is going forward no matter what. And I am going to commission you to take what you've heard from me today and what I will reveal to you from here on in, and I want you to do something, and no one's going to stop you, not the Jews, not the Gentiles. I'm going to take you further, and you're going to make an impact on the world. But here's anything interesting thing about it. It would have been a lot better for Paul so he wasn't persecuted, so he wasn't, you know, called a nutcase, so he wasn't called somebody who's making this up, if Jesus would have let everybody else there hear the vision. I mean, think about, because after this, we find that Paul goes in seclusion, and sometimes visions takes time. We're going to talk about that in a second. But what happens here is now Paul gets up, and I can hear the dialogue now. He's blinded for a while, so now he's at the, you know, he needs the help of all his people. He's told to go to a house and to heal for a while. But when he gets up, and they're all looking around, what just happened? No one heard this conversation. No one knew what was going on. And here's Paul. Can you imagine this? And this is my humor here. Hey, guys, I just talked to Jesus. We're changing direction. Now, every one of those individuals with him were also given commission letters, think about this, to stop Christians. They were in power. They swore. They had an oath. They had a badge, Christian Stoppers. When Paul gets up and says something is transformed, and he's declared then, and he declares to Agrippa, I met Jesus, I'm following him now, he put himself at risk to being killed or arrested now. But he had a vision that changed his life radically, and he didn't care. And he also had confidence, because when Jesus said to him, the Jews are not going to touch you and the Gentiles not touch you, he had full confidence because that vision he got was so real, so dynamic, that nothing was going to persuade him. And he spent his life carrying out the vision. Carrying out the vision. And when you think about that, we think about you and I. Sometimes we go through life and we stumble. We wonder what tomorrow is. What will happen next year? What will happen in 5 years? We don't know. Recently, I keep thinking about what's going to happen the next few years. I keep having these dreams and vision and things. Okay, what's going to take place in my life, here, wherever? And I think to myself, and by the way, sometimes when you get older, you begin to reminisce more about where you've been instead of being focused on where you're going. And that's easy, because most of us at my age, our lives are more behind us than before us. And that's fine. That's the way it's supposed to work. But here's the thing. When I think about this, is we go through lives wondering what we should be doing. Wondering what's going to happen next year in 5. Where am I going to be? And we wonder this all the time. And then we try to manipulate things. We try to manipulate things to our benefit. Sometimes we think, I'm going to try this path. I think I'd be good at this. Sometimes that's the way we measure our vision. If I'm good at something, that must be my vision. I mean, if I have speaking abilities and I'm an extrovert, maybe I should go in ministry. Most pastors I know are introverts, including me. And people that know I like being by myself. One reason I went into ministry is so I wouldn't have to sit in crowds. I could sit by myself on the stage. Okay, that works out pretty well for me. But here's the thing. Did you ever stop and think that maybe what you needed, instead of trying to figure this out, trying to go through school catalogs for college, trying to go through the help wanted to change careers, wondering if this relationship will make you happy or not happy? Have you ever just thought that maybe what you do is you say to God, can you give me a little bit of what Paul got so I have full confidence and knowledge this is what I'm supposed to be about and doing? Because I want to live my life saying I was not disobedient to the vision. What it said at the close? From where? Heaven. See, we sometimes get our motivation from earth instead of getting our vision from heaven. That's where the direction should come. And the most satisfied people, and I'm talking about the Christian body here, are those people who can say, I know whom I believe in. That's a good old song there. And I know what I'm about, I'm called to do, and I'm happy doing it. I wasn't appointed by the pastor, I wasn't commissioned by the church. I simply said, this is my calling, this is what I'm doing. And it blends in very well. In fact, in our leadership team, you know, there are a lot of things we recruit people to do, like vacation Bible, we need a lot of helpers. But when it comes to leadership, I would rather have somebody say, I feel that God wants me to lead the children's ministry. And we've had the same children's ministry leader for over 10 years, I believe, a decade. And I believe that's a calling. That's not because, you know, I said do this, you'd be good at it. It's not because it's my sister-in-law, although it's nice to have her part. It's because she knows this is where God wants her. And the thing about it is, when you get that kind of vision, you do not get distracted from it. Because you're not always wondering, am I doing the right thing? You're going to have what Paul said, I have not been disobedient to the vision from heaven. Later on in Philippians, he says, I have known what it is to be content. You know why he was content when he writes in Philippians? Is because he knew what he was about. He knew where he was going. He knew why he was going. He knew who he was serving. And he didn't care about any obstacles because he was promised by God that he would take care of obstacles. And when it was time to go home, it was time to go home to heaven. He wasn't going to worry. In fact, he writes many times, don't worry. Don't have anxiety. He's the one around. You know why that? It's not because life was easy. It's not because he didn't have persecution. It's not because he was the friends of everybody. He had his enemies. There were those that tried to kill him. He wasn't always the most popular preacher. Sometimes he preached for hours. One time he preached and a guy dropped over dead. That's never happened to me yet. I hope it never does. I've had some fall asleep and look that way. But the thing about it is, he just kept going. Because the vision was from heaven. And sometimes, I think to myself, you battle with all these things or whatever, and you just like to have that contentment on, this is who I am, this is what I'm about, this is where I'm going, this is why I do what I do. And you won't stop me. Let me give you some things here. And the first one will be on the PowerPoint, guys, so this one you're good with. Visions are conceived long before they're achieved. One thing about the Apostle Paul and every other person that had vision in the Scriptures is they got the vision, but they didn't go right into their work. They had time to get away from everything, to prepare themselves for that vision, which brings me to another few things I want to say to you here that are not in the PowerPoint. Vision is personal before it's public, which means it's passionate here, it's personal here, before you take it somewhere. The best leaders in anything, church, whatever it's going to be, are those that are so boiling over with passion to do something that it finally comes out public. But it starts with a personal before it's public. Vision must be developed in you before it's developed from you. Vision transforms you first, then transforms the situation or people or others around you. Vision first has to work internally. Paul, when he got this vision, he was sent to a certain home. He had to wait till his eyes healed. He had to sit, and he sat under the teaching of a Christian person. Here's a guy, listen to this, that was going to be the most well-known, except for Peter, Christian evangelist, church planter in the New Testament. And the first thing that God did is put him in school to learn. See, even though you got the vision, sometimes you need to be mentored. You need to learn from somebody. In fact, choose somebody that can develop your skills and understanding to be able to carry out the work of God. And by the way, the older you get, don't be afraid to still be mentored. Nothing wrong with that. Let me give you some thoughts here about don't give up on your vision. And I really want to drive this home as we get ready to close this out. Don't give up on your visions even though you didn't start off well. Said from the beginning, we have this illusion. Someone says to you, you're a pastor, and so you must have been raised this way and followed the guidelines and did all these things or whatever. And I'm thinking, no, I was the one who didn't follow the guidelines, quit school, left home at 17, joined the military, didn't want to talk to my family, had it out with my dad, had it out with everybody or whatever, got involved in things I should not have been in when I was in the military and stuff. And the thing about it is that God has a way of taking the way we have done our lives and sometimes using it to be able to be a catalyst to help others. My brother, who pastored, just retired a few months back. He pastored for 40 years in Virginia. And one thing him and I were talking about, he never could work with teenagers or young people because he got frustrated with them. Because my brother got saved at 6 years old. He had business cards at 13, called himself pastor. He was ready to go. I was the complete opposite. And the thing about it is, he never got into those things that normal kids get into. He was called that goody two-shoes. He went right from the one, he was the apple of dad and mom's eye. And he says, but you seem to have no problem when teenagers and young people are doing stuff and they're involved in things. You don't seem to give up on anybody. You don't seem to think too bad of it. I said, because you did all that. He says, you come from a perspective I never did. And sometimes where you've been gives you perspective to help somebody where they've been. And so in all reality, if you're in a situation, wonder if God can use you, but you have a history or a story that maybe you don't want to tell anybody, you're ashamed of or whatever, And it didn't start well. Okay, Paul was killing people. That's not the resume for pastors today. I'd like to pastor Cornerstone Church. I spent a stint, you know, in prison for murder, but I'm better now. That's I'm sorry. I mean, to me, that's not the resume. Paul had that resume. I'm fortunate because I have a friend of mine in Kansas out there who'd had a criminal history, became a Christian. He's been pastoring now for about 13 years, and this week he posted on Facebook that he finally got his full pardon after being in prison before. And I think to myself, he's pastoring, but he's got a story. And I think to myself, somebody would say, well, he shouldn't be pastoring. He's been in prison. You know what? It doesn't matter where you came from. Vision is about where you're going. Even if family and friends don't support you. I put this one here for this reason. Don't give up on your vision. Because many times, here's what we do, especially when you're younger. Mom, dad, brother, sister, friends, what do you think I should do? I don't think you're cut out for that. I don't think you have the skills to do that. I remember that when me and my brother, we're close in age, we're only a couple years apart, and my dad, you know, was pushing him for ministry, and my dad was pushing me for military. Ministry and military. And be honest with you, I was told, you know, you can never do what your brother's doing because he's got great speaking ability, he's smart, he reads books. And I never read a book in my life until I got in college. How I got through school, I have no idea. They just wanted to pass me each grade to get me out of their school, I guess. But the thing about it is I think about all that, is I remember that I was in Bible college, and first semester, I just got out of the military, had the GI Bill, and I remember I was down in the coffee shop, and I had college kids right out of high school that were there and some others, and they were kind of prudish. I mean, they were already acting ministerial. And I remember that somebody came to me and said, you know, you're never going to make it in the ministry. And I said, why? And he says, because you have a tattoo. Now, you understand, tattoos are the norm today, okay? I may get a new one in a week or two, okay? My wife, who now has 4, 5, or 10, I don't know what you have now, so. But here's the thing. Back then, seriously, in the 70s, it was taboo. And I got kind of defeated. And there was an old pastor, and he's passed on now, Dr. Dow. He was basically, at that time, he was the president of the college for about a year in that interim time. And he heard what was going on. He came over, put his arm around me in front of this guy. He says, you know, I thought about getting a tattoo once, and let me see yours. And he looked at mine. He said, that's not bad. That's not bad. He shut them all up. And I thought to myself, though, is that there are people out there going to say because of things you've done, whatever perceived is not, you know, churchy is going to be there. And I thought to myself, you know, I want to make sure we share with people here is whatever environment you're in, whatever people you can reach, God has designed you to be able to reach those people. We don't all have to look and act alike. And to me is don't let anybody persuade you and say to you, well, you weren't raised in church, or you had done this, or you have this, you had this addiction or whatever, and you still may fall into that. You know what? Ministry is about broken people ministering to broken people and having a great time doing it. And when you fall on your face, others pick you up. They don't knock you back down. And we don't shoot our wounded. A couple more things here. Even if your journey is full of surprises, don't give up on your vision, even if your journey is full of surprises. And there will be surprises. There will be hurts. There will be pains. There will be struggles. There will be doubts. But don't give up, even if it's full of surprises. And the last one of these points here, even if it takes you time to realize your vision. We get a vision for where we're going to be in life. We get a vision for ministry. I got a vision for here, for this church. When we started the church 18 years ago, one of the things I said from the beginning is that I my strongest vision and desire is to make sure we own something. Because when I leave here. I want to leave as a founding pastor. I want to know if God takes me home or if I retire. I want to know that we're not renting, because that does not give stability. I want to make sure we're stable and we're dug deep and we own something. So my greatest vision for this church was achieved about 4 months ago. Now, I got other visions now for what we can do. But to me, I actually felt that day we closed, I held the keys, I looked around, I waited for somebody to grab them, take them from me in the lawyer's office. I stand behind Tony, he's bigger, make sure somebody comes near me, you tackle him. Kelly was there, you tackle him. And I thought to myself, we got the keys, and it still was unreal. To me, is even if it takes time, don't give up. Even if it takes time for your vision to be revealed. Let me give you the walk away. If you're new with us, simply the walk away is a final thought here as we leave here. Don't limit your vision by where you are today, but by where you can be in the future. Everybody has some place they can be, and something next, something exciting. And the best way is to say, this is what I know I'm about, where I'm going, and what I'm supposed to be doing. What I'm supposed to be doing. Would you bow your heads for just a moment? Wanted to speak about this today, and I think it's important to vision cast and develop ourselves. But it's also important to make sure we're not floating around. And so many times, no matter what age category you're in, you know, I think the toughest age categories for what we're all about is two of them. I think it's between the ages of 17 and 25. I think it's between the ages of 60 and 70. Because on one, you know you're beginning your life and everything is before you. And on the other one, you're at the end, not of your life, but of your probably your career, and you're thinking about, what am I going to do with myself now? Those two are tough. And you want to make sure you're relevant. You want to make sure that you have meaning. And to me, I think a lot of time comes down to the fact that God, just give me a vision for where I'm going. And you're here today, you're in that fog, you're struggling, you're wondering what to do, what's next. Maybe the job didn't work out, the relationship didn't work out, whatever it might be, and you're wondering what's next. Maybe to say, God, I need you to give me clarity of vision so I can say that I have not been disobedient, deterred from the vision you gave me. I need clarity. And then you get that clarity. You know what you're about. You know where you're going. It may take time. You may need to put yourself in places to learn. But you know, this is what I'm going to do. This is who I am. This is what I'm about. This is what I've been mandated to be about. And don't let anything stop you. Father, we're so thankful for today. Lord, I pray, Lord, that you would just take this lesson here, Lord, and help each of us as individuals to be able to look to the future and have full confidence that what we're doing, where we're going, and who we're going to be with. We ask in the Lord's name. Amen.